Welcome to Melt University's 2020 summer program. This year, our virtual intern program will help you build your brand, inform you on a variety of career paths, and introduce you to top executives in sports and marketing. Here's your host, President and CEO of Melt, one of the largest independent sports and event marketing agencies in the country, Vince Thompson.
Welcome, students of virtual Melt University Summer 2020. We're off to a tremendous start with our podcast, and our lunch and learnings are coming up. But today, we have a very, very special guest, and we have a very tremendous, relevant guest who personifies pursuing your passion. He personifies the future of sports and the future of sports careers, and this gentleman is going to be continuing to be bigger and bigger and bigger time. So you're going to want to build a relationship with him. My friend Adam White is the CEO of a publication, and it's a media company called Front Office Sports. It's a new business news platform that covers the sports industry. And since 2014, and I've had the privilege to break bread with Adam, we have a lot of ideas and ventures that we are trying to build together. But he is a true next-gen pioneer. The site has been recognized by Forbes as one of the top 50 must-follow sports business Twitter accounts in 15, 16, and 17. Graduated from the University of Miami with a degree in sports administration, but his story is amazing. And we're going to get into that story today where literally in his home in Arizona, out of the love of sports, began talking to a lot of leaders in the industry, and how this thing has evolved is just, I'm so proud of him, and I'm honored that he's on our podcast today. But I'm telling you, Adam, welcome so much to Virtual Melt University, and we thank you so much for your time today.
Well, that was a heck of an intro, so hopefully I can back all that up. But no, I really appreciate the time, and looking forward to chatting. It's always fun.
So let's dive right in. Tell our audience and our listeners, tell them what Front Office Sports is, and then I want to dive into its conception.
Yeah, so Front Office Sports, like you noted, you hit the nail on the head there. It's a business news platform covering the sports industry. So really anything that is in business that impacts the sports industry is within our purview of coverage, focused mainly on our morning daily newsletter and then our on-site O&O properties. So just like a traditional media company, our business is to create content, grow audience, and then monetize that audience through various mechanisms, including native branded content. We did events when we were in a post or a pre-COVID world, I guess, and probably will do so in a post-COVID world and have found some other unique ways, but very traditional across the board from a monetization standpoint in terms of, like I said, the business of media is really comes down to three things. It's you create content, you grow your audience, and then you monetize that audience. And we do it in very similar ways to any other what would be normal media company. I'm not going to sit down up here and say we reinvented the monetization of media wheel, because we haven't. We've stuck to the guns of, you know, what is branded content, what is native newsletter placements, what is lead gen campaigns for B2B companies and the like. So yeah, for us, it's, I think we've taken a different type of approach to it, but with very similar, you know, revenue mechanisms as of now, seeing as we're only about a year and a half old as a full-time company.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to our students, Front Office Sports is a must read every day for me and for you. If you truly want to learn what's going on in the sports business every day, if you want to understand it, if you want to network with the leaders, and Adam, if you read his editorial and you read his content, it's just amazing. It's so enlightening. I've been in the featured in there several times, but you know, Adam, you told me over lunch or over dinner when we had it together a few months ago, it seems like years ago.
No, it feels like years ago. Jeez.
And maybe in dog years it has, but yeah. but you know, I went to Auburn as to be a sports writer, stumbled into the sports information department, was able to parlay a career. But talk about the genesis of Front Office Sports. Talk about sort of where you were in life in Arizona and what you were contemplating and what you were thinking about. And, you know, had come back from Miami and how this thing really evolved. Because, guys, this is a prototype inspiration for everybody in our audience.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was really just the genesis of a class project. So when I was back in school in 2014, like you mentioned, I was at the University of Miami. And at the time, as a freshman, one of our class projects was to do informational interviews with people who were working in sports. And so I did that. And then I went home to Arizona, where I was born and raised. And I thought to myself, well, what is it that I can do while I'm home for my first freshman summer? I'm, you know, likely not going to be able to get a job. I did apply for a few different jobs, didn't get any because they weren't hiring for 3 months. And then the other idea was, well, you know, if people tell me it's not about just what you know, it's about who you know in the sports space, what is it that I can do then to make sure that I know enough people by the time I graduated? And so I looked back and I was like, oh, why don't I just do informational interviews with people who work in sports? Mm-hmm. And that's what I landed on. And it was funny because the first original logo, I think, paid like $40 for it. I actually talked to my dad and we tried to figure out like the name of it. And we were going to make it like Executive Report or something like that. And I'm glad we didn't, because Front Office Sports, I don't know, it just has a much better kind of feel to it, in my opinion. And so for us, that's kind of how it all started. And I built the Wix website and I put it on LinkedIn and said, hey, I'm just looking for people to interview and I want to tell your story. And so I started telling people's story. And really the first year or so, it was all informational interviews. I did 110 of them the first year and continued to do them over the course of the next 4 years as kind of the business evolved from there.
That's amazing because Adam, talk a little bit more, because what we tell the kids today is that unlike when I was coming through school, you had to go to the library, go to the encyclopedia, go to the yellow pages, go to the resource guides to really track down and find this information. Talk about the various technology tools that you employed and deployed, because I say to everybody, it's like, you can be your own talk show host right now. You can build your own audience right now. And the title of my book coming out is Building Brand You, which as you get to the college campus and all these opportunities, you have to begin positioning your professional brand right now before you get into this. It was an uber competitive marketplace for jobs prior to COVID. It's now going to be really, really brutal because so many people are out of work in the marketing services and sports industry that higher qualified people are going to be willing to accept lesser and fewer jobs just to get a job back. So it's going to compress or depress the job market for entry-level employers. So talk about using some of these tools, and then we're going to segue into in LinkedIn in just a few minutes. But talk about how you were able to take advantage of the technology and the tools available to kids these days.
Yeah, I mean, it was luckily, I mean, that was 4 years ago, 5 years ago now. So technology and tools weren't nearly as the same, I think, right? Like, obviously, there wasn't anything like podcasting as big as it is now, you know, back then. So the only thing that really was there at that time that I could kind of wrap my head around was what would be like drag and click website builders. And so that's what I did. I drag and clicked and built a website, figured out how to do everything else because it's all on YouTube and Google. And so that's how it all started, was with a Wix website. And we were on Wix, then we were on Squarespace, then we were on Medium, then we finally got to WordPress, and oh my gosh, what a mess. And so, yeah, I mean, it's definitely been something that's all over the place, but, you know, realistically, from a tech perspective, it really just kind of started with leveraging social media to kind of basically not only reach out to people, but share what I was really writing, I guess, at the time. And so, you know, when it comes down to it, and I think it still is pretty simple to this day, was that, you know, you have all these platforms that allow you to build audiences for free, you know, right? Twitter, LinkedIn, things like that. Right? It doesn't cost you anything to build an audience. You just have to figure out what content you can start with. And the content that I started with was the informational interviews. And what was nice is that I use other people's brands and their brand equity in the space. And they were able to help make our brand equity better, right? Like someone got interviewed by me and then they shared that interview, then that's like validation for them about FOS, right? And so that's how we did it, right? That was the playbook, right? Interview someone, have them post it, have people go to our platform, have people read these things, and then just go from there. And yeah, in hindsight, you would have never guessed, but I think that's why like the platform matters to so many people, is because oftentimes like that's, you know, that was the first and only time anyone has ever written about these people. And so again, you know, the biggest thing is that a lot of these things that you're taught is, you know, reach out, see how people are doing their jobs, whatever. But my thing was, is like, okay, so instead of reaching out and saying, can I pick your brain? I said, can I tell your story? And oftentimes that leads to a much longer than 15-minute discussion, right? Because everyone, if there's one thing that we all know, is that everyone likes talking about themselves. And so if they're talking about themselves, they're likely going to talk longer. And so then I just use that as what would be like my personal MBA, and honestly, the personal MBA for the business, in the sense that every single interview I ask people, like, what do you want to see? What can the industry do better? Blah, 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 off the record. And they just told me, like, we want to see an award for younger people. Okay, that's how we built Rising 25 and built it into what it is today. I want to see an award for this. I want to see an award for that. I want to do this, that, and the other. And so, you know, once we got the investment, then we were able to execute on that. And that's why I think we were so successful year one. And it was really going to be another amazing year into year two post or pre-COVID. Little setback here and there, but you know, that's a long-winded answer of saying I started off with a Wix-based website, which obviously you still can do now, and there's even more tools for it, and LinkedIn.
Well, that is absolutely a brilliant strategy. And talk about, because we talk to these kids a lot about the interview process, the resume process. That effort is only as important as you make it. Interviewing the interviewer, noticing the emotional cues around somebody's office, or leveraging emotional and ego cues to get and gain your attention. So in other words, if I get a generic solicitation for a job and it's to our generic site and it's like, attaches my resume and I need to make a dollar, I immediately flush it. If I get a resume that says, hey, Mr. Thompson, War Eagle, I see you went to Auburn. Congratulations on your success. Attaches my resume. Here's how I'll bring value to your organization. Talk about because the trick of the trade you used was so brilliant. You got these people talking about themselves. Everybody, you know, loves to talk about themselves. I always say, enough about me, let's talk about me some more. But it's a brilliant strategy to use that emotional connection. So if somebody writes you and says, hey, Mr. White, congratulations on the success of Front Office Sports and go Hurricanes, more than likely that's going to get your attention than not, correct?
Yep, for sure, 100%. I mean, again, it's all about bringing value in the ask, whatever the ask is. You know, one of the early people I interviewed for the site, his whole thing was being a fountain, not a drain. And so how can you be a fountain for people, whether it's an ask, whether it's in, you know, interview process, whatever it may be, what is being a fountain look like? And I think that, you know, is something that has been super important to us and super important to the overall business, is that how can we continue to be a fountain? And I think that's the best approach to take, right? And then understanding, like, if you're going to interview someone or if you are going to say those things, just know what's going on, right? I think I found that the biggest thing for me is I got in a cadence of understanding when people would respond, right? Like, so instead of emailing people early in the morning, I would email people later in the afternoon when they may have a little bit more time on their hands. They don't have meetings when we were all having in-person meetings, things like that. And so, and then if their season was in session, I wouldn't email them in like on days in which they had games, right? Mm-hmm. So again, it's just little things like that if you go 1% extra further than everyone else, you have a better success, or you have a better chance of getting all the things that you want to get because you took the 1 or 2 minutes before to do the work, right? It's like measuring twice and cutting once, right? So that should be everything. Like how many times can you measure to make sure what you're doing is in a place that is going to be the most impactful for you and is also going to make sure that you're also delivering your message in a way that is going to be seen by them and also taking the time to respond by them.
Well, that fountain, not a drain. I'm probably going to use that one again. That is amazing. And then the kids, the insight of the cadence of when Adam would get the most response from busy executives is absolutely brilliant. And you can apply that same standard to the reach out. You know, people in the mornings are getting their coffee and they're getting up to speed and they're returning calls and they're getting their task on hand. But toward the end of the day, they may be a little more open to seeing that email, to responding to that email. And then if you give the correct subject matter line, and then you put some, as we say, the meat on the bone, you're going to probably get a better response than not. What are some of the creative ways that kids could and can and have gotten your attention on solicitations? Because not only are you a busy sports executive, you run a very high profile media company and you're out there with thousands of followers and thousands of readers. What would snag your attention? Because guys, what I want to tell you about Adam is he's not that far removed from where you are in the classroom. So listen to him good, because he's on all sides of this equation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, I don't know. I just knew that I came from that place and I was the one always asking the questions. So quite frankly, as long as it makes sense and there's some sort of actionable ask, I'll always respond. It just depends, you know, what time I respond. I'll try to do it, you know, later at night, probably around 10 or so when I have a second or I'm done with everything else that I needed to get in, get in during that day. But you know, the other thing too is I just always schedule them for the weekend, right? So I always talk to people, and if a student reaches out, I'll say, yeah, sure, send me a calendar invite for Sunday. And the people who send me a calendar invite for Sunday usually are the ones who I end up chatting with. The ones who don't or don't want to talk on the weekend or the like, then I end up probably getting lost in my inbox or whatever it may be. And so that's the one thing I do is just like, if I'm going to have the conversations and I want to have as many as I can, not only because I think it's impactful for us as a business, but I was that person who was asking for people's time. So that was one thing. And then, I think that's really it. I mean, it's just like, don't sugarcoat it, right? Like, you don't have to call me Mr. White. You don't have to, like, you know what I mean? Like, all these little things that you can just say, Adam, like, hey, like, really appreciate what you guys are doing. Would love to chat X, Y, Z. And the other thing too, is that outside of email is the best place to do it. LinkedIn, you know, sometimes I'll forget because it's just not as easy to follow up with LinkedIn. Or for me, I like will resend my email to myself if I need to do it. So I always recommend people go and email me. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that, again, it's just all that follow up. So if someone reaches out to me on LinkedIn, I'll just say, email me. And if they don't email me, then I don't end up hearing from them. So, it's kind of a two way street, but also like, my email is on every social platform that I own.
Right.
It's not a hard one to find. And I do it on purpose because I want people to be able to reach out to me. So, it's just being straightforward with the ask, letting me know what you're looking for. And then, you know, I always respond to everyone realistically. And if I do respond, it's just more so like, hey, let's make sure we can do this on Sunday when I have a little bit more time to focus on this. And I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, fit you in between a bunch of other stuff during the week.
So what Adam is trying to say, students, is that it's only as important as you make it. And he does the same thing that I do. I'll put I'll call them hiding Easter eggs and little tricks to see how much effort you're actually going to put in to follow up with me, because what you are doing, this is an audition process. And what you're doing is you're communicating to Adam what type of employee or teammate or coworker that you would be, because he's going to have to invest his hard-earned money and his hard-raised capital into you as an employee, as in a teammate. And so all of these are little tests that are built in to the process. And it's showing self-starting and self-initiative in this process to him. So Adam, as it relates to careers and sports, and sporting events. Obviously, there's so much turmoil going on right now in the sports world. There's no live sports, which has obviously impacted our business. We've got the post-COVID world going on. We've got a lot of other issues that have been needed to be addressed, you know, name, image, and likeness and equality and those types of things. Where do you see the evolution of careers for this generation of sports marketers? And while they're on college campus, which we say is the greatest professional lab, where do you see this heading if you had your future lenses on or your crystal ball out?
Yeah, I mean, I always tell this to new people in this space and or even just current people. It's like, okay, in a remote world, like what skills are important? I think it's communication. I think it's the ability to understand how to write and get your ideas through in writing, whether it's, you know, you are a really good person who writes longer emails or you understand that maybe it's a slide deck that you need to put together. But really, communication, I think, is, again, the softest skill that most people kind of take for granted. And so not only are you going to have to be able to come up with good ideas, you're going to have to be able to elucidate those ideas. So I think that's the biggest importance. I think this is the unfortunate part about all this. And like, I'm kind of bummed by this because of what the strides we have seen is that I think what you're going to see is a contraction of a lot of these sports teams. From a hiring standpoint, to really only sports teams notoriously have been bad when it comes to, and it's not just teams, but you know, teams and athletic departments and the like have been notoriously bad when it comes to having people who work far too much and are understaffed. And I think you're probably going to see a little bit more of that. I think we were starting to finally get to see people who were paid what, you know, you're talking about other industries are paying people. But I think what you're going to see again is a contraction across the board. And so people are going to be looked at and, you know, accelerated if they have multiple skills, right? So if you're in marketing, can you run social media? Can you do Photoshop? Can you shoot videos? Can you, you know, can you write copy for advertisers, right? Like, you know, again, just trying to arm yourself with a tool belt that's going to allow you to succeed, because at the end of the day, events are going to come back, right? People are going to go back into stadiums for sure. So my thing is like, okay, what can you use over the next 6 months to prepare yourself for what will be an increasingly digital presence on social, but also something that, you know, is going to likely be some sort of transformational shift for the industry. So, you know, again, focusing on the content, focusing on being able to not only find content, but figure out ways to distribute content, best practices, things like that, I think are going to be really important. You know, from a revenue perspective is, you know, what kind of IP and franchises are these teams building to drive diverse revenue? That is now not as, you know, much tied into, like ticket sales revenue and, mm-hmm. you know, just traditional media revenue, media rights revenue. And then I think the last thing, and I think this is just something that's really interesting, is like, as sports come out of this, I would really like teams and leagues to see themselves more as like true business entities and not teams and leagues. And I think you're starting to see that shift with professionals who are, you know, business professionals. Like the Arizona Coyotes just hired their president and CEO, has never worked in sports, but has run, you know, the investment banking side of the owner's business and things like that, right? And so I think you're going to start to see a lot more of those, because I've always wondered, and I think this is like going to be a really interesting thing, is like regular brands and companies that are doing the revenue and the kind of the overall worth of these sports teams are probably doing 1 to 2 M&A deals a year, you know, maybe more depending on how much their revenue is. So it's like, how can these teams start to buy up auxiliary entities that can help them become what would be vertically integrated media or vertically integrated companies, right? Like, perfect example. And again, I don't know if the story has really been told, but Jerry Jones owns Legends, right? Which is part of the Cowboys thing. And he also now, Legends is, you know, contracted by 50 organizations or whatever. Don't quote me on that. Jerry Jones, also, they're the only team in the NFL that makes and produces their own merchandise, right? And then they sold those capabilities to, I believe, I don't know, it's a UPS or something like that, right? Where they're producing the uniforms for UPS, or I can't remember if it's actually UPS. So again, don't quote me on that, but it's a big, it's a big company like that. And so my thing is like, why don't more, like if I'm a sports team, why would I not buy a brewery so I can have any type of beer that I want, right? Like in my stadium, right? Why wouldn't I buy a spirits brand, like a local spirits brand, so I could sell spirits in my stadium and then also be selling custom branded spirits externally, right? Like there are these other things where
right.
I think that's going to be something that you're going to see more of, because these teams are now going to start to prepare for what is a potential time again where sponsorship, media, and ticketing revenue essentially all disappears again. And so if that's the case, right, if all of that disappears, what are you left with? Right now, they're left with nothing. But if you can figure out ways to send solidify yourself to where if that happens again, which hopefully it doesn't, but if for some reason it does, then you're not, you know, really, you know, caught with your pants down is a euphemism, but like realistically. So you see a lot of these other businesses, right? Like, and Amazon is obviously an outlier, but Amazon bought Whole Foods. Amazon bought this business. Amazon has videos. Amazon's looking to get into sports. Amazon's doing this, that, and the other. But like at the end of the day, it's because they've built such a good ecosystem that they can now go out and find tangentially related pieces that fulfill business objectives, but also keep them as, and really almost make them a recession-proof business, right? Like everyone needs groceries. Like, so Whole Foods, not only is it a delivery node, but if for some reason people, you know, stopped wanting 2-day packages, now you have a company that's doing X amount of revenue and groceries that you can lean on, right? So all of these different things that I think hopefully businesses and teams, excuse me, teams and leagues get started to get smarter on, right? And I think that's going to be something, I know I went on a little bit, something a little bit more interesting to come out of all of this.
Well, that is actually brilliant what you just said. And Jerry Jones, to your point, personifies that new business model. If you look back in the old days, you know, the Bush family owned the Cardinals for many, many years. And obviously that was an outlet to produce and promote Budweiser beer brands. You know, George Steinbrenner was probably an early pioneer. And then he started the, you know, the Yes Network, which was a cable network. So a couple of points. And Adam, I found it interesting is that actually when Mr. Blank, who owns the Falcons, was building the Mercedes Stadium, they actually outsourced the sales of the suites and season tickets and PSLs to Legends. So to the uninitiated listener, Legends was started by Jerry Jones, and it was to sell and promote hospitality and season tickets and PSLs around the Cowboys. He built this business model, and then he pitched it to his fellow owners. And so the point is there's going to be so many new opportunities in what Adam says is this ecosystem. And the other thing that Adam pointed out, and I love these words, I love the word, is the toolkit. You got to have a toolkit coming out of college, to get the Adam Whites and the Jerry Jones attention in this world. You got to stand out. And one thing you got to do to Adam is you got to demonstrate the value that you would bring to his organization. Are you a great writer? Writing is a lost art. Writing has carried me a lot. So are you a writer? Do you know how to build websites? Do you know how to build newsletters? Do you know how to produce events? So within Adam White, he is a media property to within himself. And so this is going to be one of the greatest podcasts, you know, Adam, that we have. And your insight and relevance to what's going on in today's world is so amazing. And so as we begin to wrap up, we sort of like to do a little bit of what we call a speed round. So if you were giving recommendations to students on, obviously front office sports is the number one place, but what are the other resources or sites that students should be trolling around and looking for to help them break through this career? Because obviously, as you said, not only are we going to have this brutal job market, but you're going to have a consolidation of jobs within the sports industry. So it's going to make these percentages even harder to break in. So what are some other resources?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more so like looking outside of the sports industry. I think like that's the important part, right? It's not just that's what's going to differentiate you, right? At the end of the day, it's like what And if you see some of the most recent hires, again, like I just mentioned, the guy who's now running the Coyotes organization comes from outside of sports. The new CMO of the NFL, I believe, comes from Activision Blizzard, right? Esports background. So you're looking at these things and you're like, okay, so there's, you're starting to see an industry trend where people who are getting hired to work in sports are coming from outside of sports because sports is looking for ways to do what outside of sports is doing, media, commerce, whatever it may be. And so I think, too, one of the other ways is, you know, I don't say delaying a dream, but understanding that there's like 90 different things that can impact a sports organization. What is one of those things that you may be interested in that you could potentially succeed in outside of quote unquote sports for the first 2 years out of school and then get hired, you know, your third year out of school to go work at a sports team and take the knowledge that you've learned in commerce, or maybe it's in, you know, media sales, right? Like, perfect example is most of these people who are selling media at sports organizations have never worked in media sales, right? So there's nothing wrong with someone going to say Turner or something like that, and you're going to go be a media salesperson for 2 years, and then you can go to the Yankees and sell digital campaigns for them, right? With a book of business that you've built. So I think the biggest thing is starting to look for things outside of sports, especially right now when you're probably going to see somewhat of a contraction. And then from a resource standpoint, I think obviously Twitter is really interesting. Also, like, it's not crazy to think about this, but like, see who other people follow. Like, that's an easy way to do things, right? So if you're on Twitter, go on Twitter and see who I follow. And if there are people that are interesting to you, follow them, right? Like, because that's going to kind of give you a sense of what other people are reading, other people are looking at. So that's an easy way to do it. Go on LinkedIn. What are people that you want to be like sharing on their LinkedIn, right? Like, I'm using me as an example, but what am I sharing on LinkedIn? Who am I sharing? Who are those people? Should you be connected to those people? Should you be reading those people? And then I have like an app on my Mac that's called Reader. It's a reader app. It's like $10 to buy. And essentially you can do any RSS feed from any like major publication and it all goes into one thing. And I kind of use that just to like go through everything. Like I have Reddit and I have RFOS and ESPN and Deadspin and, you know, New York Times and The Ringer and things like that. And that's just an easy way where you can at least aggregate a bunch of the stuff. So that's been something that's been super successful or helpful for me too. But yeah, I mean, it just really comes down to what you're interested in and then finding not only things that are inside of what you're interested in, but also outside of what you're interested in too. And how can you connect the dots, right? If you're looking at, perfect example, I have a friend who works at Visa and I was talking to them about just a lot of what's going on. And then one of my big things coming out of this is like, everything post-COVID is likely going to turn to a contactless world. And what's weird is that it's much more prevalent in everywhere besides the US for some reason. Contactless payments, contactless experiences, everything like that has become much more prevalent, especially in, you know, Japan and the like. And so I just hit them up and I was like, what are you seeing? And they're like, yeah, I mean, month over month, 60% increase in contactless payment usage. So for me, I'm thinking, okay, so if that's happening, then how am I preparing a stadium or a venue or something like that to go contactless, right? Because if I haven't done it already, I should do it. And if it's going to become more of an adoption for people, especially in COVID, because that's one of the reasons why people, you know, there's been a whole thing of like from normal tickets to contactless and people are just like, it's tough for people to make a change. But now you're going to start to see people who are going to do it because it's quote unquote more sanitary. So how can you take advantage of that? And so those are the little things that you can start to lean on and find examples of, I guess, external industries or adjacent industries and find ways to kind of execute ideas internally. And I think that's where the most successful people are and the most successful organizations are, right? Like, sure, it's great to look at what the Cincinnati Reds are doing, obviously, if you're a baseball team. But if you're a baseball team and, you know, your business is in media and content, and like, what are the media and content companies of the world doing? How are they selling? What do their media kits look like, right? So those are just little things that I think, you know, most people may take for granted. But, you know, if I was running a team where my business is media and content is the game, like, I would be paying attention to what all the media and content people are doing and how can we do that in-house, right? What looks like a Bleacher Report in-house at, you know, an NHL team, right? Like, what can you do that allows you to do that? What about verticalized Instagram accounts, right? Like, again, there's just all of these different things that people are, what's nice about digital and what's nice about these platforms is they're doing them in real time. So you can mm-hmm. see what they're doing, and the coverage is there. So you can get an understanding of what they're doing. Now you can't obviously copy them just because, you know, apples to oranges, what Amazon's doing in web service versus what you're doing, but there's still learnings and takeaways there. So that would be, again, kind of my roundabout advice there.
Yeah, that's very so spot on and so valuable because the information is already at everybody's fingertips. You just got to put the effort in to access it and mine it and resource it and network it. So in closing, of all the great interviews and the great people that you've done, which one was your favorite? What stands out and why?
I don't know. There's a lot of them that have been good. I don't know. It's tough. Yeah. You do so many of them that you can, it's hard to put your finger on which one was like your favorite one, because all of them at the time felt like your favorite one. Right. Like mm-hmm. I remember doing one with like the guy who was running marketing in Adidas, and I was like, holy shit, like I'm a big deal. Like I got this guy. And then you right. know, when you're doing someone who runs, you know, basically the entire business operations of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And again, it's just like all of these things that realistically it's tough to put, you know, as say, hey, look, this is my favorite one, because at the time, most of them in that moment were my favorite one. So unfortunately I don't have like a real solid specific answer there.
I tell you what, you just got a library and catalog of these great people. So guys, for you guys to go back and resource and research. But Adam, such great insight today. Thank you so much for your time. Guys, listen to this podcast, re-listen to it, reach out to Adam, network with him. He's amazing leader, amazing innovator, and going to be great for our industry for many, many years. Adam White, CEO, Front Office Sports, we thank you so much for joining the students of Virtual Melt University Summer 2020. Thank you, Adam, so much.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Vince. Hope you enjoyed today's virtual class. We'll be back soon with another edition of Melt University 2020.